over the last 25 years or so, I've preached in California by the ocean, in Alabama by the Gulf, in Indiana by wherever it's by, in Phoenix. And I always wonder, when you come to holiday weekends, where do people go? Because we would say the same thing by the ocean or by the Gulf or in Indiana. There are those on the roads of travel today, and we wish them well, that they are worshiping well and God's with them today. It's a jungle out there. Good to see Alan and Vera here. We don't get to enjoy their company on Sunday morning very often. What's the greatest sermon that you've ever heard? Well, I'm sorry, Ryan, it's not yours and it's not mine. A lot of people would say it's the Sermon on the Mount. It takes up Matthew 5, 6, and except for two verses, chapter 7 of Matthew. It's clear as a bell, concise, and it comes from a perfect source, which makes it important to us. We know that the Sermon on the Mount begins with the Blessed Art Thou. We call those the Beatitudes in our study. That's sort of the introduction, I think we might call it, of that great sermon. There's a part in verse 8 that I want to focus on this morning. Blessed are the pure in heart. I thank Trevor for leading songs that would get our minds in that kind of a frame. Blessed are the pure in heart. And if we were to be with Jesus right now, and we would say, how blessed, Jesus, are the pure in heart. He would most likely say, I've already told you that, Ken. They shall see God. If we could just somehow, in our frailty of our human makeup, come to any grips at all on what it would be like to see God, we wouldn't have so much trouble being pure in heart. I think of Moses, who was put in the cleft of the rock because God was passing by and he didn't want his mere presence to destroy his servant Moses. I've never seen power like that. You think about the forces of nature and the hurricanes that regularly come, or lightning that strikes a forest fire that wipes out thousands of acres of wooded land in northern Arizona. But still, that power is not even on the same page as the power of God. God spoke into existence everything. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. There are some things that God hates. That's meaningful. It's not the lesson. But in Proverbs, the sixth chapter and verse In the sixth chapter, verse 17 and 18 particularly, God is said to hate the shedding of innocent blood. That's verse 17. And in verse 18, he hates feet that are swift in running to do evil. Those hands and those feet obviously are guided by an unclean heart. And they devastate everything they touch and those that are around them that would hope they were better directed. But sometimes, just as impure of those hands that are active and those feet that are active, just as impure is the front that people put on that give the appearance of clean hands and clean feet, but are dirty on the inside. I believe that the effect of that kind of dishonesty on the inside is greater than the effect of that kind of devastation on the outside. And thus, if you have a pure heart, if you have an honest heart, you shall see God. Early in God's book, we see lying and deception. God said to Abel, "Where's your brother?" "I know not where he is." Every parent that sits in this auditorium today understands well the compounding effect of dishonesty. Happy are the parents who have children that will own up to wrongs committed and work toward a better tomorrow. Frustrated are the parents who are fed dishonesty to their inquiry. We have been exposed in our government to cover-ups. Oh, it makes great headlines for the media, who editorially are the greatest cover-up artists on the face of the earth themselves. But cover-ups always produce inappropriate character. You don't, years past, sit with those of the generation of Richard Nixon and talk about Watergate. You talk about the cover-up. You talk about the dishonesty, the way that he led the people differently than he looked on the outside. That's the shame that comes with dishonesty. Double-mindedness isn't new. The serpent said to Eve, "You'll be wise." God doesn't want that. That's taking a truth and making it an untruth. It's double-minded. People with that kind of a mindset will not see God. David, the king, the one after God's own heart, speaks of such in Psalms, the 12th chapter, verse 1 and 2. He said, "Help, Lord, for the godly man ceases, for the faithful disappear from among the sons of men. They speak idly, every one with his neighbor, with flattering lips and a double heart they speak." When you choose those people you want to be around, those people that are your friends can't choose your parents, can't even choose your kids once you decide to have them. But when you choose people that you want to be around, when I choose Nick and Jen to go to lunch with, or I choose Austin and Janelle to go to lunch with, do I choose them because they are double-minded? Or do I choose them because that they are honest? Do I think that they're going to tell me everything that there is that they know? I hope not. And they won't. But you can trust what they say. If I can trust what you say, Brian, you are my friend. I may disagree with what you say, Chad, but if I can trust what you say, we have a point of beginning to come to agreement. I can look, if I can look at you and know that you're sincerely giving me insight into something of life, then I value your association with you more than many other things in life. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. I told Lance the other day, I got this problem with my computer. I'm always having problems with the computer. This world would have been better off if computers had never been invented. That's the message from my generation. Mark it down. Lance didn't say, oh, I can fix that and then just ruin everything. He said, you're the only guy I've ever known that has problems that I can't fix. I appreciated that. I appreciated having unique problems. Blessed are the pure in heart, Vernon, for they shall see God. This is not child's play. This is an attitude, this is a lifestyle that we have to have in order to get where we want to go and be there until time doesn't end. That's what Jesus is telling us. Joab, in 2 Samuel 20, he said, how's your health, brother? And he grabbed his beard to greet him, and he stabbed him in the stomach with a knife. Sometimes that happens today, but not so physical. Listen to what Jesus says regarding the outside correctness and the inside filth. He's talking to the Pharisees. He talked to the Pharisees a lot because they're just out to get him. He's talking to them. And in chapter 23 of Matthew, verse 25, he says, you make clean the outside of the cup of the dish, but inside they're full of robbery and self-indulgence. What person? Even those people that go camping, they must be a hardy breed. I've seen people, campers, there's some around here. And I've seen them pick up a cup, sometimes even to put coffee in that didn't need a cup to hold it, and they look on the inside. Why? Why don't they look on the outside? Because that which is inside the cup can defile the body and make you sick. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the people that have got it together on the inside. For they shall see God. But Jesus didn't stop with the cup. One I like even better than that is about the graveyard. In the same chapter, verse 27, you're like whitewashed tombs, which on the outside appear beautiful, but inside they're full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. At Gethsemane, it was about midnight, and the bloodthirsty mob was approaching Jesus, who had just spent those horrific hours in prayer with his best friend sleeping. And they're approaching, and the signal to that mob to identify Jesus was given by Judas. It was a kiss. And such a depraved nature of a close associate seemed to shock Jesus. He said, "Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss?" When Ananias and Sapphira sold their property and they brought the money, everything looked good, didn't it? But they were deceptive. They were dishonest. They had to be asked, "Did you sell it for this much?" They just brought it and laid it at the apostles' feet. I would imagine a pretty generous offering. And the young men carried him out dead because they were dishonest. Now, I don't care whether I'm talking with my friend Jake or my friend Bob. And that's the two ends of the spectrum, age-wise. Be honest. You can't see God unless you're honest. Control your tongue. Solomon says, person's a fool that just blabs everything he's got on his mind. Nobody wants to know everything on your mind anyway. It's a waste of time. But be honest with what you say. I'm convinced. When Noah comes up to see me, he hardly ever says anything to me, but he comes, sees me, shakes my hand, smiles. I am convinced that if he ever does say anything to me, it'll be honest, because I know his sister, and she's honest. And I know the parents that trained them, and they're honest. You know why that happens? Well, because it's magic. You walk in the door at 2202 North 40th Street and you just get zapped with honesty. It's because there's a bunch of people here like Melissa and James. There's a bunch of people here that want to see God. And that's one of the ways to do it. One of the highlights of my thought process is baptisms at Monte Vista. I've baptized people in a lot of different places. I'm not bragging about that, I just have. Amos McCoy said, "No brag, it's fact." Just have. But boy, not so much anymore, but it used to be here that when you got in the water, there were all these kids. These little kids would come. Remember that? Wow. That's such a thrill. It almost takes your breath away to see those little kids coming to see something that one of these days they're going to be faced with a decision about. Well, let me tell you. Regardless of how magnificent that act is, and it is magnificent, if you don't have the right heart when you enter the water, you just as soon not enter the water. Because honesty is required of God. Do you know that God has heroes? I remember the first time that thought ever hit my mind. And it was just hard to get the people that know say it's hard to wrap your brain around or your mind around or something like that. I didn't invent that, but I kind of like the way it sounds. But God has heroes. Now, I knew that God had someone after his own heart, and I knew that God counted Abraham to be a friend, but God has heroes. To God, a man in whom there is no guile is a hero. John 1 in verse 47. When that type of person shows love for his fellow man, he does it with a pure heart fervently. That's a hero of God. When man's faith in God is unfeigned, no fake, that's a hero to God. With that hero to God, his highest goal is love out of a pure heart and of a good conscience and of faith unfeigned. 1 Timothy 1 and verse 5. That kind of a person channels his thinking on things that are true and honorable and just and pure and lovely and of good report. Philippians 4 and verse 8. That person knows that a man cannot bring forth good unless his heart is full of good treasure. Luke 6 and verse 45. That pure in heart person knows that he can deceive, but he just doesn't want to. Don't you believe that people who are honest are that way because they're not smart enough to think up a good, dishonest answer? People that are honest, whether in this society or that, this generation or that, people that are honest because they want to be honest. And the reverse is true. People that are dishonest are because they want to be dishonest. I know, and you've probably known people that would lie when a truthful answer was of no consequence. It's just a matter of habit. But they'll not see God, for they don't have a pure heart. He doesn't want to injure others. He doesn't want to conduct himself in such a way that there are evil consequences. Have you ever considered the promise of Jesus in our text? The pure in heart shall see God. The very nature of God prevents man from seeing God. If you were there on the mountain and Jesus, and you were, I don't know, a couple thousand years old maybe, and Jesus says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God," you might say, "Wait a minute, you can't see God. God made it so that you can't see God." John 4 and verse 24 says God is a spirit. Colossians 1 and verse 15 says God is invisible. John 1 and verse 18 says no man has seen God at any time. But I want you to think about something for a minute. There have been times when God chose to reveal himself to man, haven't there? God in form of man wrestled with Jacob. God manifested himself, Exodus 24, to a lot of people. So the question then that I'll ask you is, if God chose to manifest himself and you can't, and he chose not to be seen, how do those things fit? Your turn to answer, Brian. The question. How will God manifest himself? I call your attention to a passage found in 1 John 3 and verse 2. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not appeared as yet what we shall be. We know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him just as he is. There's going to come a time when those who spend eternity with God shall see him as he is. God chose to manifest himself that way. In Revelation 22 and verse 3, the Bible says, and there shall no longer be any curse, and the throne of God, the Lamb shall be in it, and his bondservant shall serve him, and they shall see his face, and his name shall be on their forehead. In the happiest of all days, to those that choose God's way, Christ will come to bless all the faithful believers. Paul said to the Thessalonians, when he comes to be glorified in his saints on that day, and to be marveled at among all who have believed, for our testimony to you was believed. Here's the message of those who love God this day to God. We have a message to God. That message is, come quickly. Be a Christian, come while we stand and sing.
Give me thy heart as a father above.